Many books have been written about Napoleon Bonaparte, but until now, no one has taken on the subject of his sister Pauline, although she was a famous beauty and enjoyed a close, some say a bit too close, relationship with her brother. Now Flora Fraser has written Pauline Bonaparte, Venus of Empire. It's published by Knopp, and it brings her to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you.
In previous books, you've written about Queen Caroline, the wife of King George IV, King George III, six daughters, Emma, Lady Hamilton. Doesn't Pauline Bonaparte represent a different sort of royalty?
Well, first of all, I've crossed the channel and she's French.
But also she she did not come from a long line of royalty.
No.
She became royal suddenly when her brother became the emperor.
Absolutely. And she grew up very poor on Corsica. And the Bonapartes, even before they became royal, and Pauline was known as the parvenu princess, or the jumped-up princess, I suppose, upstart princess, the Bonapartes were very much looked down on in Paris when Napoleon came to power and brought his sister Pauline with him, because the Corsicans were regarded as very savage, barely, not polished Parisians. But of course, Pauline went on to become the most polished Parisian of all of them.
Well, when your brother is the emperor, you set the standards, even if you're a bit odd. So far, you've chosen to write about women because you're a woman, or because they're often neglected by male historians?
I think they are interesting for me. Their stories are not out there in the dictionaries of biography. Their stories are there in their letters to each other, to their husbands, to their brothers. And their stories sometimes, which were famous in their time, and then the Victorians came along and said, this is a bit much, and Pauline's story is so outrageous that the Victorians suppressed it entirely.
Because you've written mostly about strong women who rebelled against the conventions of their times.
Yes.
Still, weren't you initially planning to write about a male subject this time?
Yes, I was, because I'd written about these six sisters, the daughters of George III, and I thought, now for a man with a public career. And I went to the British Library in London and I looked through papers and saw various worthy candidates. And then one evening I just rang up Bob Gottlieb, my editor here at Knopf in New York, and I said, Bob, I want to write about Pauline Bonaparte. And he said, done. I was expecting to have to pitch him for some hours. And so Bob and I have had the most happy 3-4 years in which the wonders of modern communication, wrote the chapters, emailed them to him, and he instantly emailed me back. It was like writing a serial, like Dickens used to write and people would read. It was just great. So hooray for Bob.
Well, many people know Pauline Bonaparte, even if they don't know who she is, because if they visited the Villa Borghese, they've seen this famous statue by Canova called Venus Victorious, and that's her. And her, the sister of the emperor, almost nude.
Yes, lying there almost naked, this extremely saucy, naked, reclining statue, which looks exactly like the portraits of her. And so there's no doubt. And also, she wore very revealing dresses. Everyone knew that was also her figure. But, I mean, it's sex on a stick, that statue.
But there's an art connection to your subjects, isn't there? The your last book, Princesses, the Six Daughters of George III, sat for Famous Portraits by Gainsborough.
Yeah.
Lady Hamilton was a renowned artist model of her day. When you look at a painting or a statue, do you wonder what the woman who modeled for it was really like? And does that inspire you?
Yes, I think there's a... I'm not a in any way an art historian, but I do enjoy looking at representations because I am trying to represent the woman I'm writing about, and these generally men, these artists, actually had her in front of them, so I envy them.
Do you have to admire the subjects you chose? Because you're going to be spending quite a bit of time with them while you're writing the books.
Yes. I think I've been very lucky that the women I've written about, Pauline Bonaparte, the latest, have been extremely strong, but also outstanding in their time.
So a lot was written about them, but also did she leave a lot of diaries and letters?
Yes, there's letters, there's papers in a library in Paris. Unfortunately, it's only open on Thursdays and Fridays from 12 to 6, so I used to have to scuttle back to London to the children rather late on Friday night.
And then Napoleon wrote to her as well.
And Napoleon wrote, and there's Napoleon's correspondence. And then there are papers in the Vatican archive, the Borghese papers, because she married Prince Borghese.
Well, that was her second husband?
Yes. Her first husband, I mean, her first marriage was a wonderful marriage to a Napoleonic general, General Leclerc.
But not her choice. She wanted to marry somebody else, and they said, this is a big mistake.
Yeah, that's right. That was the first. That was almost like a sort of Jane Austen, Marion Dashwood wanting, and it didn't happen. But she was really happy with this General Leclerc. And then they went to Haiti together, on a military expedition, and he died of yellow fever.
Yeah, but she was already going wild, wasn't she? She married him when she was 16. Suddenly, this Corsican girl thrown into Paris society, and Paris was the place, wasn't it, even then?
Absolutely the place. I mean, the women were as sophisticated as you could get.
You get the feeling that Napoleon was marrying off his sisters to important figures, that it really had to do with politics.
Well, he chose Victor Emmanuel Leclerc, this first husband of Pauline's, because he rated this general as a fellow officer who he really wanted to have his sister married to the best of his fellow officers. And I think that if Leclerc hadn't died, we would have had Marshal Leclerc and Madame la Maréchale.
Wasn't Haiti still in the hands of Toussaint Louverture and his men at the time?
Yes, and it was...
So was Pauline in danger?
Yes, she was in grave danger. And at one point, Leclerc had orders for her to be embarked for France because there was a pitched battle, and he sent word that basically the French were about to be wiped out. Pauline refused to embark and said, "The sister of Napoleon does not feel fear." In fact, the battle then continued, and the French won out. And
although they didn't get back Haiti.
No.
Flora Fraser's latest book is Pauline Bonaparte, Venus of an Empire, published by Knopf. But you write that there were many rumors about her outrageous behavior during a period of 6 weeks that she spent in Port-au-Prince while Leclerc was off fighting the rebels. Is there any way of knowing whether that rumor and some of the other really shocking rumors were true?
I think that Pauline, as I say in Pauline Bonaparte, she started having affairs during her marriage to Leclerc, But her sister-in-law, Napoleon's wife, Josephine, Napoleon, and frankly everyone in Paris at this point, was celebrating by the revolution by being extremely free with their favours. It didn't prevent her having, as I say, this very strong marriage.
Josephine was also being unfaithful to Napoleon?
Yes, and that is something that the Victorians chose to elevate Josephine as this saintly figure, the wife, when she was far more vigorous in her romances than Pauline. But Pauline was effectively wiped off the historical scene.
Well, you almost have the feeling that there was a sense of entitlement that these people who were suddenly elevated to so much power after they had really not been all that important. And I guess you can you see this with rock stars and movie stars.
Yes, and Pauline I often think of as the ultimate material girl, like Madonna, who... it's rather like sort of, what's the point of being the emperor's sister if I can't right. behave like this?
So how did she wind up marrying Prince Camillo Borghese? Was this another politically advantageous match?
No, this was material girl saw a Roman prince when she came back a widow from Haiti and saw his jewels, his palaces, his rents of 2 million francs.
And an opportunity to live in Rome instead of in Paris and be away from all that attention?
I think just actually an opportunity at that point, because her brother wasn't emperor, to be a princess. So Madame Leclerc becomes Princesse Borghese, and she appears at her brother's sort of consular court, where everyone is Mr. and Mrs., and she crows over her two sisters and everyone else, wearing all the Borghese diamonds which she's had sewn onto a dress of green velvet, and she crows, "I am a princess, a true princess."
But then she models for Canova, as we said,
yes.
Semi-nude. Was her husband comfortable with that?
Yes. I think that she said later, it was a pledge of my love for you. And to begin with, Pauline and Prince Borghese Camillo were quite well suited in some ways.
But she didn't remain any more faithful to him than she did to Leclerc.
Absolutely not. And Camillo, who was an extremely kind man and was really endlessly tolerant towards Pauline. Poor Camillo sort of would say, "Paulette, Paulette." He called her Paulette, as the family did, instead of Pauline. And she referred to him as, instead of his Serene Highness, she'd refer to him as his Serene Idiot. I mean... She really was. I mean, she was beyond outrageous, capricious, but always, sort of hideously entertaining.
Well, how did Roman society take her? It had to be a lot more conservative than Parisian society was in those days.
Absolutely. I mean, the Pope was the head of the state, and Pauline's mother-in-law, the Dowager Princess Borghese, said to Pauline when she saw the statue, "How could you pose so scantily clothed?" And Pauline said, "There was a good fire in the room."
Her brother had also posed for Canova, although he was wearing all of his clothes at the time. There were rumors that she and Napoleon had an incestuous relationship. What were you able to find out about that? Do you think it might have been true?
Well, in the book, I show a cartoon of the time which shows Pauline and Napoleon in bed together.
Well, this is fairly late in their lives, isn't it?
Yes, this is when Pauline has really come to the fore as Napoleon's hostess in Paris. Napoleon is tired of Josephine, his wife, because they haven't had a child. And Pauline is the sort of agent for divorce. And as part of this, it's perfectly possible that that their relationship, which was very close, may have then become incestuous for a time.
But hadn't he given her sisters titles and not her?
He gave her a title, the Duchess of Guastalla, and she said, "Oh, Guastalla, what's this? Is it a large country? Is it a state?" He said, "It's a burg or a village." She said, "A village? You've given my sister Caroline a Grand Duchy of Burg. You could take your village and whatever." Anyway, she then, because Pauline always got the best of everyone, including Napoleon, she made him buy her duchy of Guastalla off him for 6 million francs, but kept the rent. And she didn't really want the kingdoms and that her brothers and sisters were handed out. What she said was, "I have no ambition but to have a comfortable life with a small number of good friends and freedom of action." And it's the freedom of action which was so shocking for a woman to seek that. But she got it.
Although looking at the family tree that you include in the book, I see that two of Pauline's nieces married their first cousins. So this was a very close family, even closer, I suspect, than your family, which is quite literary. She went to stay with him when he was exiled to the island of Elba, as a show of allegiance?
Yes. She said to her brothers and sisters, and who were not going to Elba and were trying to deal with life after the fall of their brother from power, and she said, "We owe him everything." She was a devoted sister. She was loyal, despite testing Napoleon's patience to the hilt. And she not only went to Elba, but she, after he then came back to Paris but was defeated at Waterloo, she tried to join him on the island of St. Helena, which really was a rock out in the middle of the South Atlantic.
That's loyalty. And then she died at 45. Rumors are venereal disease.
Yes. I think she may well have had, probably did have, venereal disease as well as other ailments, gynecological rather than venereal. But I think she actually died pretty conclusively of cancer of the liver.
45 years old.
Yeah.
She was very famous, even notorious during her lifetime. Why do you think it's taken all these years for someone to even think of writing a book about her? After all, this is an interesting story, and it does involve one of the most important moments in world history.
Well, I do think that she was too scandalous a figure for the Victorians to deal with. There was, and when Napoleon's nephew, Napoleon III, came to the throne in France, they wanted to have a myth of Napoleon, which included a virtuous wife, Josephine. A scandalous sister wasn't on, and the English, the French, and the Italians have all their version of Pauline, but the French concentrate on Pauline in Paris and actually in the south of France, where she, if you like, was a precursor to Zelda Fitzgerald. Where she was a lounge lizard down there long before Zelda. The Italians have Pauline, her statue in Rome, and the English are interested because the British Embassy in Paris was once Pauline's home. But I've tried to look at her, go back and draw together these three veins and more, and look at her as she really was, an extremely strong woman who really went for what she got and got it.
And we thank you for talking to us about her. In fact, there'll be more talk, right? Because Ms. Fraser will be giving a reading and signing books tomorrow at 12:30 at Idlewild Books. That's at 12 West 19th Street near Fifth Avenue. The book, Pauline Bonaparte, The Venus of Empire, published by Knopf. My great thanks to Flora Fraser for being our guest today.
Thank you so much.